Welcome, everyone, to the Meaningful Hearts podcast, where we discuss the everyday questions that make us or break us if we let them. With your hosts, Drew and Daniela, take our hands and let's walk this journey together. Welcome back to another episode of the Meaningful Hearts podcast with Daniela and Drew. And today we're going to do a segment, which you are all familiar with, called Questions to a Therapist. Daniela is smiling.
You can't see it, but I'm smiling.
We can't hear her smile, but she's like, me. Yeah, so I'm going to ask her a series of questions and I'm going to get a series of answers. Daniela, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. The first question.
Disclaimer. I don't know the question ahead of time.
Oh yeah. She doesn't know the question.
People are wondering.
She is in the dark about these questions. That's how good she is.
No.
Okay.
It's just more fun that way.
So the first question is, how can I cultivate a greater sense of purpose and fulfillment in my life if money is a constant worry?
Fulfillment and money. Worry. Okay. So that's a great question.
Part me, part AI. It was a mixture.
As you were saying the question, or as you finished saying the question, I was like, I wonder if this kind of relates to what you had talked about in your previous episode, or like if it was partial due to that and the fact that you're like scanning the room right now. But I think part of it is first defining a few words. What does purpose mean? What does fulfillment mean? What is the significance of money, and to what extent are you worrying about money and finances? It's going to sound really cliche, but a big part of it, answering the question for yourself, is looking within of what is something that you find fulfillment in, what's something that excites you. I guess that would be a start to answer the question, because based on people's experiences, upbringing, environment, purpose and fulfillment could mean different things. For me, I find a lot of fulfillment in being able to help people and being able to support people and have people say, hey, I thought of you when I said this, or you'll be so proud of me. I think one of the defining moments for me in my work with kids was I had seen a client for about a year, and she was a kid. And at the end of our work together, our last session, we just went over what she had learned and the impact that our sessions had on her. And then she gave me like a hug at the end, and it was a very special moment. And that to me is very fulfilling. So I think in starting to answer the question, you kind of have to separate it a little bit and really understand what purpose and fulfillment means and what money and worry means. And in this day and age, I'm not ignorant to the fact that we do need money to survive. But how much weight does money and worry carry? Does that make sense? I hope that was a good answer.
I think so. I think it's kind of a, I guess there's like balances, right? There's different things, different cups that have certain weights. Mm-hmm. I think having a good distribution of weight amongst all of them, because there are things that are going to strain more at certain times. But if one of them is straining the majority of everything else in your life and how much energy and focus you'll put in that, I think it's important to understand what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think that if you're worrying about money, I think it's important to explore your understanding and your concept of money to begin with. And if there are any unhealed wounds that you are carrying regards to money, like if you came from a family where there was, I don't know, say a gambling problem, for example, or when somebody made bad choices, or when, even if you went hungry, or even if your parents didn't have savings, or if you came from a family where you weren't, where money wasn't talked about. I know that was the case for me. Money was never talked about, really. Even now as an adult, it's very awkward to talk about money. And I think people in general, it's something that everybody thinks about. Like when you meet people, I think people, and asking like, what do you do for a living? The thought behind that is, I wonder how much money you're making. And there's so much that plays into that as well. So I think exploring money and the understanding, and then what's the level of worry as well?
Yeah, I think part of our worries comes from validation from others, right? We want, in all reality, I mean, the average person, I would think, has enough food to eat, has a place to sleep, has enough clothes to wear, has, you know, the things that are needed to live a pretty decent life, right? And I think that a lot of us, that's just not enough, because the bare minimum is not where society is. The bare minimum is like below that. So money becomes a worry, because in all reality, we all make a decent amount of money. Like, if we all have these things, then why is money on the forefront of it? It's because we're like, it's like we're in a race with other people to move forward and have more, to be validated by others. And
yeah.
And I think that definitely comes from conversations. I know my family, like, make sure you get a good job. Make sure you do this. Make sure you do that so you can get that. And you can get this so you can feed your family. You could do, like, great things. And it's like, it's all centered around money. It's kind of...
Right.
It's kind of crazy where how long that's been, I guess, put in my head at a very young age. Like, I was like brainwashed to think that.
Yeah. Which
I think a lot of people in a lot of ways have been, right? Get the bag, chase the bag. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent answer. Now we're going to move on to the next one.
Okay.
Daniela, have you ever heard of emotional hijacking?
Ooh. Now, would I be a bad therapist if I didn't know what that meant?
It's okay. I read a little bit more than the average person and the average therapist, so I should know. Okay.
I just did a massive eye roll.
Yeah, she's like Charlie Chaplin. She does everything in silence.
I wouldn't necessarily say that it was something I was, like, a definition that I was exposed to in school. I don't know if that's it now.
I don't know if I loosely knew what it was. A friend of ours, Tarun, had a conversation on his podcast about it, talked about it on his episode. Emotional hijacking is when something triggers an emotional response that overtakes your ability to act in a good way. Kind of just, it just takes over. Your mind just takes over and you just react and you have no control over it. That's emotional. Okay. So yeah, like I said something to you and you got so upset with me that you just went at me like crazy. You had no control over your emotions at all. That's like emotional hijacking.
Yeah, that's interesting. It sounds like just a variation of fight, flight, or freeze response.
I guess. I mean, if you want to Google it, I don't want to do it a disservice either. I'm sure you know what this means in other terms. It's just, I guess, a very
no catchy... I like the term, actually.
Yeah. So
because I guess it's a good way for people to, I guess, place some distance between them and the reactions that they experience. Yeah. Not to excuse the behavior, but just if you're ever in a position where you feel badly about a response that was out of your control because your emotions took over, it might help with some self-compassion of, oh, I was hijacked a little bit. Now, how can I take back control? But the reason why I say it sounds like a variation of fight, flight, or freeze is because of the idea that you're over is it overtook or overtaken?
I think it's overtaken.
I think so too. Or you're taken over by your emotions. You can't help it. It's like a primal thing.
It's definitely not overtooken.
No, no. So if you're triggered to feel scared, you're either going to, like, the feeling of being scared is either going to put you in a position where you're ready to fight, a position where you're ready to run and leave that situation. I think a lot of people are somewhere with either one. And then there are people also who just freeze, kind of like a deer in headlights. It reminds me of a term. Okay, I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant here. It reminds me of a term that I recently learned called tonic immobility. And essentially how this term came about was, I forget the philosopher or psychologist's name, but he did a lot of work with dogs. And throughout working with dogs, he would keep them in cages. And so he had a cabin in the woods, or at least this is what I read. And he had a cabin in the woods somewhere remote, and there was a lot of rain and there was a flood. And so because the dogs were stuck in the cages and they were helpless, by the time that somebody got to them and opened up the cages, they were pretty much frozen in place. And that's where the term tonic immobility came from, because their initial response was, I need to get out of here. I need to do something. I need to leave.
Yeah.
But because they were actually in a physical cage, the body's response now went into a tonic immobile state. So yeah, it kind of reminds me a little bit of what you're talking about.
I think it's part of our primitive or our ancestral, like, abilities, like something that's ingrained in us to survive, right? Mm-hmm. The ability to like not think, but just act in the most primal way possible to evade being killed, right? I mean, a long time ago, you know, there were a lot of elements out there, like things that could, creatures, people that could kill you. And I guess that it's something that's built into us. Now, when we're in a more civilized society where, you know, you don't hit somebody over the head with a rock if you have a disagreement with them, because you'll go to jail. And
some people do.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, swinging rocks or other things.
Right.
My other question to this was, well, since we talked about it, was how would you approach this subject with someone that is constantly triggered, right? This is supposed to be something that, listen, it happens from time to time. We are not ourselves.
Sure.
But what if this is something that somebody has to worry about going to the grocery store or in any type of setting where at any moment something could trigger them? How would you approach somebody that had that type of situation, like where they don't know when that could happen again?
Well, first I would explore if there is specific places where it happens more than others, kind of like gathering the information. Okay, is it more likely to happen when you go to the grocery store? Is it more likely to happen when you're going to work? In what areas is this happening? And put it on a hierarchy, essentially. Is it happening more so in this area than in this area? And I think the other thing that I would do, if maybe that's too much, is how can we get you to feel safe? Because that's essentially what it is. It's a lack of feeling safe, whether that's in the environment, but more so than anything, in your own body. How can we get you to a place where you can feel safe where you are and safe in your own body? And then I would teach a grounding technique or a breathing technique, because I think that's something that I would actually do first. Is how can we get you to feel safe, and then explore where it's happening, or really circumstantial, because we can't really do any work if you're in a constant state of being emotionally hijacked. It just doesn't work. I've had it happen where, maybe not necessarily emotionally hijacked, but where people are just either really tense all the time, and angry or reactive, or they're very anxious, they're very stressed out, They worry a lot and it shows physically. So I think I would work on the physical symptoms and how to emotionally regulate, or not emotionally, how to physically regulate, and then do the emotional work. That was a good question too. So that was half you, half AI.
Well, the emotional hijacking idea came from listening to an episode today. Mm-hmm. And I guess I use part of AI to vary or give a variety of question based on.
I think it's just
vary
or diversify is what I would say.
Got to bring out the thesaurus and the dictionary. Just hand in, just have them on deck.
Yeah. I think those are really good questions, though. I think for our listeners in particular, they're good questions for them to think about themselves, whether it's meaning and purpose to what state are you in on a daily basis? How often are you being emotionally hijacked?
I think so, too. I think that it's, you might have had these episodes and you didn't know what you can call them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some people, you know, it's like, I don't know, I was acting pretty wild or crazy the other day, but we are, you know, we are descendants of earlier versions of us, that we have some primitive things in our brains that still operate. We have more understanding of the human brain and in the body and how to, I guess, override some of our knee-jerk reactions, but we're human beings and we do have emotions that sometimes get a little out of hand.
For sure.
And it's good to know that you can get a grasp on it or have an idea what it is.
Yeah. And I think just naming things sometimes is very helpful.
Yeah.
Those were good questions. I hope I answered them.
Yes. You did a very good job. Oh. Mm-hmm. That's food for thought. That was a lot to digest.
Yeah.
We thank you all for listening and we will catch you on another episode.